I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, now for the second time recording with us this week. The audio file was corrupted, but very pleased to have him back. It's Peter Berlin, football writer for Sports Illustrated, and he also writes for Politico. Glad to have you back again. We've changed up the topic a little bit this time, though. We're going to be talking about what clubs' goals are short-term, long-term, and how that affects either what they've done in the transfer market or just historically how their clubs have developed. I think a good place to start is the upcoming Manchester Derby, where we have two managerial greats of the modern game with Mourinho, who has seemingly a very short-term plan, and Pep Guardiola, who's trying to instill maybe a longer-term project. What are your view of those?
Well, I think part of the issue is what the club's objectives are. Manchester United didn't qualify for the Champions League last year. It's the second time in 3 years. They're in a hurry, as are Chelsea. Manchester City have been in a hurry ever since the Emiratis took over. And I think they've seen over the last 2 or 3 years that it's just got worse and worse. They've got lumbered with old players. They've got lumbered with expensive players like Yaya Toure. They keep on trying to buy ready-made centre-backs to just plug in, and they're just not good enough. I don't know who scouts centre-backs for them. So they're going in different – and, of course, City are in the Champions League this year. So they're going in different ways. City have taken the short-term option. They're trying to build a great club. And the short-term option is not getting them there. So Guardiola, the idea is he will build a great club from the ground up. City have done a lot of other things, putting franchises in place in Australia and, of course, in New York, hiring what they think are good young managers like Vieira, putting them in a system, building up their youth system. So it's a logical extension of that. Mourinho is of the old school, the third year is the curse. United are in a hurry. He's got to get them back in the Champions League this year and contenders next year if he can't make the contenders this year. That's the objective. There is no long-term for United. They are a big club. They're just not delivering. And, of course, there are different ways that manifest itself. You mentioned when we're talking off air about Iheanacho and Rashford, two teenage strikers, one of whom is going to start probably this weekend, Iheanacho for City. The other one, Rashford, who's just got a hat-trick for England under-21s, having been demoted to the under-21s because he's not starting for United, would probably be on the bench again. Guardiola is not a centre-forward type coach. But nevertheless, Dzeko's gone. Gabriel Jesus has arrived at Christmas, but he's only 5'9". He's notionally a central striker. They bought Nolito. You know, who they bought, Iheanacho's number two, and clearly Guardiola's happy with that. Mourinho, on the other hand, has bought an instant spine for his team, Bailly, Pogba, and up front, Zlatan. Zlatan's going to start. Zlatan's block. He has two very promising young strikers in Martial and Rashford. Zlatan's going to start on Saturday. He's a different type of striker from anybody City now has. In a way, I love Rashford, but he's going to have to be patient. There is, interestingly, of course, the dynamic of the club, the history of the club. United fans like home-produced players. They like young players. already Rashford's become the first teenager ever to score for Mourinho in the Premier League. He's under pressure and he understands that. He understands that he has to keep the fans happy, even if he often gives the impression that he likes provoking them.
Yeah, I do think it's a very interesting narrative. And a kind of a side point with Rashford, and we didn't talk about this before, so I hope I don't put you on the spot too much, is the rise of Rashford came about through a Martial injury, and he leapfrogged James Wilson and Will Keane, who were both once very highly touted themselves, although never scoring at the top level the way Rashford has already. And I'm noticing the same thing at Tottenham with the sales of Carroll and Benteleb, with Mason and Benteleb, and Pritchard, who was supposed to be very promising, but now Onuma has leapfrogged him. We have the Chelsea loanees just going everywhere every year, not really developing, but you do get some of these bright spots. Do you think that it's better for Rashford to be sitting behind the likes of Ibrahimovic and kind of Martial, even though he's playing on the wing, but I do think he is more of a center forward than a winger. Do you think it's better that he's learning from people like that at the club, or do you think it would have been better for him to maybe go on loan to a lower side?
I mean, Rashford's a strange case because by all accounts, nobody in the youth system thought he was that brilliant.
Yeah.
But Van Gaal picked him. I think you look at the other two, you mentioned Wilson and who was the other one? And you can see very quickly what the issue is. They're not quick enough. They're neither particularly quick nor particularly big. And Rashford is quick.
Very good on the ball.
And very aggressive. He's come in, and in a way, one of the paradoxes of Rashford is he shows why Mourinho doesn't trust teenagers, because he plays with the optimism of a kid. Nothing can go wrong. Every time he gets the ball, he's going for the throat. He's not playing percentages. He's not thinking, oh, if I lose the ball here, it could be terrible. He goes for it, and he's very, very effective at it. He runs at people. He's got a tremendous shot. He also plays his head up. He can find, once he's drawn defenders, he'll find opponents. But he's always wants to go on the attack, to take the ball forward. He's not looking after possession, playing the percentages, passing sideways. You know, you can see why Mourinho doesn't like that. And the question is whether the coach or the opposition, who are going to kick him every time he gets the ball, are going to beat that out of him. But you can see from the first game what he brought to the mix. Martial also in his first half a dozen games did that, and has since, I don't know, had it coached out of him, been told he has to defend. Maybe everybody watched him. It's the other problem with transfers. You look at the guys who start really well and you think, wow. But everybody's watching them. Everybody's looking at the videos. Maybe what's happened to Martial is everybody looked at the videos and thought, okay, he's going to beat us that way, but he can't beat us this way. So going back to Martial, to Iheanacho and Rashford, the one thing you say is that Rashford's numbers, or rather Iheanacho's numbers, are actually better in goals per minute, yeah, shots per minute. He's made more appearances, but he's played fewer minutes because Rashford had this run at the end of last season where he suddenly started every game. You know, he looks like the real deal, but then so did Martial 6 weeks into his United career, and now we're all wondering.
Yeah.
Again, it could be that sort of plateau thing, the way learning works.
Yeah, the way you were talking about Rashford there kind of reminded me of how Dele Alli broke through at Tottenham.
Yes.
Where everybody else in the squad was very much sticking to kind of the roles that Pochettino has enforced. Even Christian Eriksen, who would flourish much more if he was just allowed to be a number 10 and just always stay forward, like we saw with Van der Vaart. But rather, he's being asked to track people back, usher them back towards Dyer. It was last year. This year may end up being Wanyama. And also lashing out at Alli. The problem is that Alli lashes out back, which sees him get some cards and into some unsavory situations. Is that something that you think is sustainable? I know you mentioned Martial maybe got some of that impetus for lack of a better word, coached out of him a little bit. Do you think that over the years we will see Ali and Rashford maybe temper this enthusiasm for going forward a bit? Or do you think that that's what makes them so brilliant and that they'll just continue in that way?
Well, I think I'm not sure I agree that Ali went beyond what he was told to do or went outside what he was told to do. He probably went beyond it. He started off at Tottenham playing deeper and just got forward so much and was so good at it when he got there. And I think, you know, Pochettino wants his players to run further than anybody else. And Ali was doing it. And this brings up a thought that actually crossed my mind briefly to talk about Rashford going out on loan. You know, I remember seeing Michael Owen at 19 in the World Cup in 1998, it must have been, in France. And he was fabulous. He was terrified everybody played against. And what happened to him is he played too many games at 18, 19, 20 when he's still growing. He wasn't that big. He got kicked a lot. And although he remained a good striker, he lost the dazzling pace. And he was just permanently injured or recovering from injury for most of the second half of his career. He had good moments, but what you worry about guys like Ali, like Rashford, is that they play too many games at this age, and it's not just that they get it coached out of them, they get put in a rigid system, they get told not, they get screened out when they lose the ball in the opposing half and the opponents break away and score. It's that physically, at a moment when they're still not fully developed, they're putting too much strain on their bodies. And given how physical and dirty the modern game is, they're just getting battered the whole time. So in a way, if Rashford starts 20 games this season, that's probably about right.
In all competitions?
Not for Rashford at 18, but Rashford at 28 or Rashford at 30. Oh. Yeah. It's one of the problems, and it's one of the reasons, you know, we were talking about transfers, and the question is which team has bought fewest players this summer? Well, it's Manchester United with just 4. Other clubs have bought 10 or 11.
To highlight that short-termism, all 4 are meant to be first-teamers. I know Mkhitaryan hasn't gotten yet, but...
But Mkhitaryan is an excellent squad player. Yes, but who's... Yes, absolutely. He's given them a spine transplant, and it's worked, and so far it's taken. Pogba's what, 23, Baye's 22. They've got time.
And Baye looks so bright.
Well, so did Phil Jones when he arrived. Again, injuries, but lack of development. But Manchester United, like Chelsea, like Manchester City, have the luxury of buying the finished top class article. Chelsea bought N'Golo Kanté, even though Mahrez won the Player of the Year award, possibly the best player in the Premier League last season. He's going to plug in. He solves the problem immediately. He makes everybody around him better. And Batshuayi, who's in his brief appearances, has looked like the real deal. The fact that the other two big names they bought are a bit iffy tells you that even for top clubs, getting the players you want in them is can be tricky. There aren't that many Champions League winning quality players available in every position, however much money you have. So when you're in a hurry and you've got lots of money, you shop first and you can address your needs. Other City are building. That's very much what their shopping tells you. Building and slightly refocusing to buy in Pep Guardiola players. And other clubs are just having to some extent, either lower their sights. So, you know, Wanyama at Tottenham or Ashley Williams at Everton are guys who are just going to step in and do a job. But whether it's a job at the level that Pogba is doing or Baye is another question. Yeah. Or else you're just buying loads of players, hoping that not too many of them get injured and some of them will pay off. Maybe in the long term.
I would like
West Ham.
Yeah, West Ham brought in so many players. And then Andre Ayew immediately was out for months. They had Aaron Cresswell, who, by the way, Sean Whetstone, who listeners of this show will know from West Ham, is saying that internally they're not sure that Cresswell automatically wins that job when he gets back fit. Cresswell obviously was very good last season, but that's how highly they rate Masuaku, who they also
has clearly got, we want to go into details, clearly got the technique, the skill, the pace, the strength. Mm. But some of the things he did, he's done the first two, you just think, what is he thinking?
Yeah.
His passing is, even when he's clearly trying to make the right pass, which isn't always the case, is random. And I'm not sure he wants to play wing back. Mm. I'm not at all sure he wants to play wing back. He didn't seem, there were times he would overlap, push forward, and then the ball would be lost, and he'd stop and bend over and take a breath. This is a guy in the 22-year-old, allegedly, in the Premier League.
I was just like saying he shouldn't be that winded after that kind of run.
No. And he should, but he should also be, you know, whatever you say about Cresswell, he's going to bust it out to get back every time. So we shall see. Masuaku is very much, you know, West Ham are very much associated historically with the what Alan Sugar called the Carlos kicker ball players. Mm. They're all these foreigners who really weren't on anybody else's radar, who they can pick up. In some cases, there have been problems with players who never played and money changed hands, and it's all a bit odd. But, and some of them pay off. Lanzini, for example.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Antonio, who they brought up. But if you're talking
for him. But Antonio's another.
Yeah.
Another sort of random. Random play.
Get a game through the first half of the season, then they made him a winger, then they made him a wing back, realize he's pretty awful defensively.
He doesn't know half defend. I mean,
those Europa League matches were shocking.
But he could score and he could make things happen. He's aggressive. He's
most
strong,
headed goals in 2016 in the Premier League.
Which also shows that's a dying art. Most of the other players.
It's a wing back, yeah.
Well, they've also read, well, yes. They're a team built for Andy Carroll. We don't have Andy Carroll. But everybody's read the research that says you damage your brain. But Dimitri Payet, what a. You know, he's really winning the lottery last year. So there, the other sort of strategy, you get it right. You get Dimitri Payet, you get Lanzini. You know, we were talking about, I mentioned Newcastle before. You look at Newcastle, they sell Sissoko for a profit of something like, they bought him for less than £2 million, they sold him for 30. They've made a profit on Wijnaldum. They made a profit on Jan Mat. You know, in the past, in recent years, they've made a profit on Kabai. They've made a profit on Debushi.
Yeah.
And yet, which division are Newcastle playing in? They're playing in the Championship, and they're playing with all the players now that they've bought as part of their endless search for good investments. Either they're stuck with them, or they like Sim De Jong or Florian Thauvin, who was not cheap. They're out on loan, Emmanuel Riviere, and they're paying presumably to part of their salary. Yeah. So you can, you know, Man City's problems the last 2 years show the difficulties of going short term, and they've switched direction. Manchester United have also, in a sense, shown the difficulty of going short-term when your squad isn't good enough. But they're still going short-term, as are Chelsea. They need to get back in the Champions League.
Yeah. I'd like to touch on the Newcastle thing a little bit more, because it kind of is a linking thread. They aren't just the selling club, but kind of like West Ham, they went out and made a lot of gambles on highly talented players like Ayoze Perez. It was supposed to work out. They did it with Jamal Lascelles, who it was between Dyer and Lascelles for them and us. We ended up with Dyer. They ended up with Lascelles, who obviously is not at that level yet. Chancel Mbemba was very highly rated when he was leaving Belgium. And so I totally agree with you. And in our first recording, but unfortunately you guys will never get to hear, it really was some great stuff from Peter. You brought up the analogy of going to the store,
yeah,
and getting either one highly priced thing or loads of tiny priced things. And yeah, the lottery tickets, I think, is how you later referred to them as well, is you just get loads of players and hope some work out.
When Manchester United bought four players, they've gone to Whole Foods and they just bought four bags of steaks. Whereas West Ham or Middlesbrough, whoever are buying 10 or 11 players, they've gone to
Costco
and they come back with 11 bags of grocery and they know they're going to throw some of it away. I would say about Jamal Lascelles, he's now the Newcastle captain.
Yeah, very strange. Also, has not played well to start the season.
He scored a goal, but nobody's played well. And he's being fast-tracked because he brings something else. He brings attitude.
Which
they needed, especially with Colaccini gone. Colaccini brought attitude, though not every week. And I think... I don't know what's happened to, and Stephen Taylor's gone, so they've had to remake their central defence. Yes, but you talk about these players being highly rated when they arrive. You know, when your club buys a player, the first thing that happens is you go to YouTube and look for the highlights of that player, or someone puts together a highlight reel of that player and puts it on YouTube. You have a 3-minute highlight reel of anybody who's playing professional football, who's been playing for more than two or three seasons, they're going to look good. Everybody's done 2 minutes worth of good stuff in their career. You just don't know. You know what you're getting with Ibrahimovic because he's been in the window for 15 years. You know what you're getting with Pogba. You've seen it with Juventus. You know he's played on a championship team. You know what you're getting with Kante. Yeah, you know what you're getting with Ashley Williams or Wanyama.
Mane.
Yeah. Well, Mane's another guy. Mane's looked, I thought, tremendous this season, yet Liverpool are mid-table. They got 4 points, even though they played all three games away. Mane, Bolasie, they're both players I like a lot, but they're still... a question of whether they can deliver every week and whether how much they'll fit into the formation, how much formation needs to be changed for them. Benteke, who's gone to Crystal Palace, just a wrong buy for Liverpool. Everybody could see it except Brendan Rodgers and Christian Benteke. But then the question becomes, okay, there are things that the players can and can't do, but you then get the mental issue. Will Benteke ever be the same player again? You know, at Tottenham, you're already having the Vincent Janssen thing. Is he the new Roberto Soldado after three games? So a lot of what happens, you talked about, are you arriving at West Ham and promptly injuring himself? There's so much. You're buying lottery tickets. Even when you're pretty sure the guy is good, it doesn't mean to say you're going to be able to get the best out of him or he's going to be able to produce. Says why you pay 90 million for Pogba, because you're 90%, 95% certain that if he doesn't get injured, he can do it for you.
Yeah.
At a high level.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. Bringing it back to Chelsea a little bit, and we touched on youth, obviously, at the top of this show. What do you think of Chelsea's idea of just hoarding as many young players as possible and loaning them out?
Well, we talked about how Newcastle have made money from selling players. And Tottenham have made money from selling their players. I would say, going back to Mason and Pritchard, Harry Winks is better, the guy they've got coming.
Than Carroll Mason.
He's better. He's got more upside in that his passing is really, really good. In Mason's case, he's a guy who started as a striker and was a phenomenal goal scorer and couldn't score when he had chances in the first team. And that's, I think, that was what's going to separate him from other players. And maybe it'll come back as he gets older, that he will learn to, he will settle down in front of goal and start scoring those chances. So going back to Chelsea, I think the problem is Abramovich is both greedy and impatient. So he wants to have the best of everything. He wants to have the best youth team. He's probably immensely proud that they've won the under 21 trophies in both England and Europe. But he also, his team didn't, why did they not play these players last season when they were out of the Champions League and bobbling along in mid-table? It was a mystery. You give them games, but you give them games, you need to give them 50, 60, 70 games to, before you know how good they're going to be, most of them, before they feel comfortable in the Premier League. That is something a Chelsea manager cannot afford to do. So they become a sort of small profit center because the amount of money Chelsea makes loaning them out is impressive. But it's, if you, I don't know, if you're a parent, given that the vast majority of youth football players don't make it, and Chelsea come up, they're going to start listening to, there's a plan now to insist that parents of youth players who sign with big clubs turn over their phone records and their bank account details to make sure they haven't received illegal payments. But if you're being promised a lot of money by Chelsea and not much money by Reading, well, okay, we can buy a house with what Chelsea are offering us. And he probably isn't going to make it anyway. But yes, they're getting money from Ajax for Bertrand Traore.
Kennedy to Watford, I think.
So they're probably getting money. I don't know. They're probably paying part of his salary because, again, the way you get these players, oh, we fancy Kennedy. The way you get him, even though, and it's astonishing to me that football players can count to 25, 30, 90 million, but they can't count to 11. You look at the squad and you think, well, where am I going to play?
Well, I mean, it's kind of the arrogance but brilliance of footballers is that they always assume that they're going to be able to beat out whoever's in front of them, yeah?
Yes, yes, with a few exceptions. I think footballers also know from training who's better than them, who's doing better, who's playing better. But you'd have thought Kennedy having... So Ake last season, wasn't it, who I really like. Why is he 21? He looked the part in the Premier League. Why is he now at Bournemouth? Why aren't they taking him?
We talked in our other recording, Andreas Christensen is arguably the most talented centre-back that Chelsea own, but they sent him out on a two-year loan, and now they can't bring him back.
But that also means he's going to get the 40, 50 games.
True.
He's going to be...
And at a good club, Mönchengladbach, who are also in the Premier
League. And against good opposition. Yes, yeah. So... But yes, but then you go out, let's say they'd got John Stones, and John Stones had done the job, then he'd have gone out alone and they'd have paid a fortune for John Stones, who made, this, I think, a smarter decision. And they lose this guy. But again, it's sort of the short term versus the long term. But yes, it's... There should be a. Why was there not some sort of recall clause in the contract?
Yeah, it's very strange. You mentioned, again, kind of the topic of this whole show, which is the short term versus the long term. With that parameter surrounding it, who do you think had the transfer window that best reflected the mentality at the club?
Ooh, Manchester United.
They're going short term and got great players. And,
but they also, and they also, they are into marketing and image, you know, alongside Real Madrid. Those are the two clubs that are obsessed with, I think, the idea of being the biggest club in the world. So there's a certain point to paying a world record transfer fee that actually makes a statement. And if you, you know, there's a lot of criticism of Manchester United for bludgeoning everybody else to death with their checkbook, for paying a world record fee. And you went on Twitter and you read the Manchester United fans a lot. And I hope I'm not offending many Manchester United fans. Actually, I hope I am. A lot of Manchester United fans internationally support the club because it is the biggest, the richest, the most successful, and confuse the fact that they can outspend everybody else with the fact that they're not winning anything in the recent years. And you went on Twitter, and Manchester United fans loved the fact they'd broken the transfer record. Absolutely adored it.
And for a player they already knew.
A player that, and the fact that they sold him for next to nothing to make way for other players who haven't made it. You know, even Alex Ferguson didn't always get it right. But again, maybe Pogba needed however many, 100, 120 games, whatever he's played in Italy.
Yeah, we had a really interesting conversation with Joshy, who's a Manchester United guy. And he was saying, if Pogba had stayed under Moyes or Louis van Gaal, would he have improved this much? And would he have wanted to stay this long? But instead, he goes to Juventus, gets to play with Marchisio and Pirlo and Pereira, who shockingly went to Watford for some reason, and right, got to play with all of these very talented midfielders, get that experience in the Serie A, which is a pretty close analog stylistically for the Premier League, in that, you know, there are tough defenses, you don't have a lot of time on the ball, and now comes back as a fully established player. I mean, obviously the disparity in the amount they sold him for and the amount they bought him for is hilarious. But maybe if you just look at the player, this was the right path for him.
Yes. In a way, what it says is a reversal of the relationship between the Premier League and Serie A over the last 20 years. So when Arsene Wenger took over Arsenal, around the time he took over Arsenal, at his instigation, they bought two young French kids who everybody knew were brilliant, who had been bought by Italian clubs and then sat on the bench. And they were Vieira and Henri. And Henri had been playing in the Champions League for Monaco before he went to Italy, Juventus, and didn't get a game because they'd bought him because he was the best young thing out there, didn't play him because they'd got everybody else already. And this is sort of a reversal of that. When you look at the number of players who are, you know, there are players going out now, there are English players going on loan to Italy. So it's another statement of the financial superiority of the Premier League. And it is buying all, you know, and again, we talked about the grocery shop. It's like when you go to the grocery shop and say, oh, I had a nice Italian dish once. There's some of the ingredients, I buy them. And then you actually don't know how to cook them. Mm. So it just sits in the cupboard.
Or you do make it, and then it's just not nearly as good.
Doesn't work because you didn't understand how to do it. So a lot of these, they're just, you know, the English clubs can go and buy whoever they want if they pay a premium. Which I think is most of them are prepared to do. So 3 weeks into the season,
yeah,
Manchester United have and Mourinho have got what they wanted and what they paid for.
Yeah, in our previous conversation, we had discussed Everton, Tottenham, and Liverpool. You mentioned again briefly that the Williams and Wanyama and Sané signings represent buying a known quantity.
Or sorry, no, it's Mane, not Sané.
Oh, yes. Right, sorry.
Although what's interesting in the first two games is how much better Mane, how much more visible Mane has been than Wijnaldum. I think are similar players. But yes, you're getting, and I suppose you could say Joe Allen is another one who fits into that category. Bolasie, maybe Idrissa Gueye, although God knows what, you know, he's played a season,
but he was a delicious worst. Can of Conte Light last season.
Yes, but he was playing in the worst team in recent Premier True. League history. And again, he might have had something to do with that, even if he did catch the eye. But yes, everybody, particularly when you talk about gambling, what everybody's gambling on is someone with the pace and the skill to unlock defences consistently, which seems to be the most difficult position to fill. So we mentioned Andros Townsend, who's gone to another club. Can he do it consistently? Moussa Sissoko. I don't know if you watched the Euros. Brilliant against Germany. He was just absent again in the final. Couldn't, maybe because the Portuguese had him worked out. Maybe he was tired. Maybe he just couldn't find a way. They presented him with a problem he couldn't solve. So, you know, you try him, you give him a few games, you move on to the next one. They've also got Georges Kevin and Kudu they bought. Mm. You know? And they've also, and Sissoko's going to be replacing somebody, like Eriksen in the team.
Yeah. Well, we know he's starting this week, probably for Lamella, who's returning too late from international duty. But where is he going to play long term?
That's the case of where having a big squad allows you to turn an accident into your advantage. So Lamella traveling all the way to South America to play for Argentina gives him a chance. Sissoko's going to, at some point Wanyama's going to disappear to play for Kenya.
But not for the African Cup of Nations, as they did not qualify.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, you're paying attention. and injuries and so on. If you have the right squad, if you have depth, you have balance, and you can keep everybody happy, coming back to why it's good to have a hierarchy, why, in a sense, someone like Rashford and Martial behind Ibrahimovic are appealing because you have a clear hierarchy there, then you will, in the natural course of a long season, Spurs were unbelievably lucky with injuries last season, but you will, and suspensions, you will get to try these guys out. Wanyama has been the best player because Moussa Dembele is suspended.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity.
And that kind of ties in with the Rashford thing earlier, who got in because of Martial. So we established Manchester United probably lived up to their philosophy the best. Is there anybody that you think might have fallen short of the mark or bought out of character?
I don't know what's going on at West Brom. You sort of feel sorry for some of the guys. They've obviously got new owners. They had an old owner in peace who I think was Daniel Levy-like in his negotiating approaches.
Or at least he wanted to think he was.
They're getting... One of the things we didn't talk about is people who stay. So Leicester have done very well by not losing anybody.
Watford as well, with Deeney and Ighalo, turning down enormous bids that arguably they should have taken.
And at the same time, West Brom might have done badly by not selling Berahino. But you look at West Brom, you've got a feel for Nasser Chadli and Matt Phillips, who I think has got potential. But how Robinson Kanu? I like Brendan Galloway, but he's only alone. It seems to me, upgrade or solve their fundamental problem, which is they can't score goals. I don't think, unless Kanu starts banging them in, or Chadli.
And I don't particularly think it's Rondon's fault, who did score 9 last year. There's just so little creativity, which I suppose Chadli should help. McLean is what he is. He's not amazing, but he can fulfill the role of at least getting forward.
He's really nasty, though. Really nasty.
True.
And undisciplined, which is surprising for a Pulis player. But again, you look at the players they've been sort of going through. Victor Anichebe, Stefan Sessegnon should have been good. Both been just allowed their careers effectively died at West Brom. So I think West Brom had a bad summer. With all these, with clubs like Middlesbrough and Watford, Swansea losing Ashley Williams, is huge. Fernando Llorente? I don't know.
Years late for Llorente to make a move.
So we'll see if Borja Bastón turns out to be any good. But you get these guys who haven't quite made it, Atletico, Barcelona and Real Madrid. Everybody gets very happy, very excited, but it turns out to be a reason why they haven't made it. I don't think they had a good summer because they've lost and not
replaced.
And not upgraded.
Yeah.
So the problems are sort of where you'd expect and I think Stoke's problem, Stoke have, again, not bought any really eye-catching names.
Boney
and Joe Allen.
And they've replaced Volscheid with Bruno Martins-Indy, who at least is a better athlete.
Yes, but their problem is not, it seems to me, is not the talent level in the squad. It's the turning talent and performances to consistent results. And the early signs of seasons, they still can't do it. And it's all the fault of the referees, of course, who are giving all these penalties against them.
Yeah.
So the clubs who are struggling in the market, it's the sort of middle class clubs who find it difficult to upgrade. It's another reason why doing the West Ham approach and just buying so many of them makes sense. Mind you, and Leicester bought a lot.
Buying Musa and then immediately replacing him with Slimani.
Yes, I haven't seen anything of Slimani yet in the Leicester shirt. Musa looked terrifying in his little brief appearances. And we shall see about Arsenal.
I think that's a lot of money spent.
A lot of money spent essentially on three players.
But in key areas where they did need.
Yes, whether Lucas Perez adds anything to what they already have. Shkodran Mustafi should be good. Granit Xhaka is the latest of a long list of Vieira and Petit replacements. He needs to avoid getting red cards and getting a reputation for having red cards.
Which we've learned from Pepe is almost impossible to shake, even though he hasn't really gotten any harsh sending offs in the past few years.
Well, a completely different subject. So before the Euros, but after the Champions League final, UEFA had a refereeing camp, and they said at the refereeing camp they were actually watching videos of specific players, looking for tendencies, looking for ways that certain players cheat. And they didn't say who. So, of course, every player in the tournament thinks they're looking at me. Uh-oh, they've watched my videos. You could have hit Pepe on the head with a baseball bat in that tournament and he would not have flinched. If you took a real battering in the final, didn't complain once. So that sort of performance, that sort of thing, Pepe's no fool. The trouble is, I think Xhaka is slightly different. He just kicks people because they have that modern defensive midfielder mentality. In fact, the modern mentality of almost every position on the field, they shall not pass. Someone beats him, he kicks them to the ground. And that is what referees are trying to stamp out. And he gets a reputation for it. That's the first element, the first problem. The second problem is I'm the central midfield player. I need to be more macho than anybody around me, which is Ngoro Kanté has shown he's not the case. You could just run off laughing like the Roadrunner with the ball. But I think he's both wants to be macho, and I think he gets beaten and then brings the player down, which is really been the focus of so many of the refereeing changes over the last decade. It's just stop that. So we shall see. You know, it's 3 weeks into the season. We shall see how this turns out. Players hit the ground running and then fade, and other players keep on adjusting and adapting and moving on to a new level.
Yeah. Based on the whole conversation we've had today and already your pre-existing thoughts, has the table that you envision at the end of the year shifted at all due to this window?
Due to the window and the first 3 weeks,
yeah.
I can see Manchester United still being top at the end of the season,
mm-hmm.
with Chelsea second.
City and Arsenal to round out the top four, Liverpool and Tottenham.
City probably to round out. City or Chelsea second, and then Arsenal, Tottenham, Leicester, Liverpool to round out the top four. One of those.
Interesting. You think Tottenham can still get up there even with Champions League?
I think Tottenham has still got up there, and I think Leicester can still get up there.
Wow. I think Leicester have the widest range of outcomes. I think they could finish anywhere from fourth to like 12th.
I think Everton actually were in that category.
Interesting, yeah.
But Everton fans have learned, the cruelest thing about hope is that if you're an Everton fan, that it always dies.
Fair enough. So, title of the show, Tottenham are going to make the Champions League.
I think they have the potential. I think they are behind the three rich guys again. Unless things unravel at any of those clubs. And, you know, Mourinho's last gig turned to crap in his hands. So we'll see. And Abramovich is a bit of an interferer.
Yeah.
And City still do not look as if they have, even though they haven't introduced a lot of the players they bought, they still do not look like a fully, they look more balanced. But they're still very hot and cold, very hit and miss. One still doesn't entirely trust the defense.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It looks like we may be able to see Gundogan this weekend, either starting or as a sub, which I think makes that team a lot better. I love David Silva, and I think it's been interesting that they've been playing him further back thus far to accommodate Sterling, who's been incredible thus far under Guardiola, De Bruyne, and sometimes Navas on the right. I think eventually that is Sané's job.
I think Navas is the incredible one that he's starting. I think Sterling is the problem with Sterling is he's tremendous at creating danger. He's got good control, good speed. He's aggressive. We talked about this with Rashford. He's lousy at turning those dangerous situations into goals or assists. So we scream at him more on the TV than anybody else because he's getting so many good situations, which he's creating, than wasting. When a lot of other players just don't, you know, when was the last time Rooney had an assist last weekend? But you look at a lot of other players, they're not doing that. So you can see why they want to persist with him. And you know, if it's something in his head, then that's a real test. This is what you pay Guardiola the big bucks for.
Yeah.
Solve that problem. It's Jesus Navas, the one I think is remarkable. He's still starting.
Yeah. All right, going from the top to the bottom, we already mentioned some teams that you weren't impressed by in the transfer window. Who do you think is going to end up dropping out of the league this season?
Well, you asked me 3 weeks ago, I said Hull.
Yeah, they've looked so, I don't want to say good, but solid? That's not the word I want, but...
They looked like they knew what they were doing against Manchester United, what they were trying to achieve, and they almost achieved it. And of course, they won their first two games. So they only have to get 34 points now. Or 33 to escape. Again, you can have that Aston Villa, the wheels come off, or Newcastle, the wheels come off, and you could see that happening to Watford. You could see that happening to of the teams that were Sunderland, if the wheels have ever been put back on, that they come off again. You'd obviously go with Burnley, Hull, and Middlesbrough, although they look like the deepest of the promoted teams. West Brom, Stoke. If Stoke keep on going the way they're going, panics can spread through the team. There's a lot of... I've given you half the division, but we talk about the transfer window and not knowing what you're getting. A lot of people are still shuffling through their squads to see what they've got. And if things go badly wrong in that period before they've really settled and before they realise that they've either got... before they realise they've drawn a bunch of low cards, you can find yourself in that Aston Villa spiralling downward situation. Or Newcastle. Newcastle actually played quite not... I won't mention the last game of last season, but even before that, there were games where Newcastle played pretty well. Mm. You know, they weren't consistently rubbish like Villa. Consistently mediocre. Or even Sunderland. So there's 8 or 9 teams that could find themselves down there and struggling to get a foothold.
Mm. Do you think there will be more excitement at the bottom of the table than there was top of the table last year?
You come back to the old issue of greatness versus competitiveness. And what we had last season was, I think... I saw a guy, I'm currently in the States. I saw a guy on a city bus in New Haven yesterday wearing a Leicester City shirt. That top of the table last season, even though it was a fake race for the last month, was just so exhilarating and so engaging and so emotionally involving for, you know, anybody, any football fan anywhere, that even if it wasn't a close race, it provided a thrill. I think this season is going to be, if it goes the way I see it going, which is Manchester United, Chelsea, slug it out with City in the mix, that's going to be the sort of season we've been familiar with over the last decade, and it could go down to the wire. Of course, Manchester United could simply just disengage if things all fall their way. One tends to think of the scripts one has already read. On the bottom of the table, really, we had two teams gone 3 or 4 weeks for the end of the season.
Yeah.
We shall see. What you really want is we don't want to see two or three clubs averaging more than 2 points a game.
Right.
That sort of kills it, and that opens up huge gaps.
Mm. All right. Well, it has been excellent speaking with you. Would you like to plug your Twitter or any articles?
Well, I should be covering the Manchester Derby on Saturday for Sports Illustrated. It'll go up there. And my Twitter feed is... Peter G. Berlin. So follow me.
Awesome.
Peter G. Berlin. And thanks so much indeed, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us this time and for joining us earlier in the week. Unfortunately, again, that one not coming out, but very much thankful that you were willing to come back and go for a take two.
Pity we couldn't work in all my hilarious jokes from last time. Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thanks. Great speaking.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.